Oh, it's Friday, everybody. You know what that means. It means the weekend is just around the corner, and it also means it's time for Full Auto Friday. This episode of Full Auto Friday is brought to you by Christensen Arms. They are the original creators of the carbon fiber rifle barrel and the makers of the lightest and most accurate rifles in the industry. They sent me a 301 mag and a 308, and all I can say is damn. I got my deer this year with the 308. I actually loaned the gun out or went hunting with two other people who got their first deer with that 308, the lightest gun that I've ever carried, and that's with a suppressor on it and with the optics. So it was amazing. I cannot recommend enough going to their website and checking out their suite of weapons that they offer. ChristensenArms.com. ChristensenArms.com. They've got traditional bolt action. They have modern sporting rifles, modern precision rifles. They even make some pistols. Go check it out. And then, if you find something you like, find a dealer and go get some. That's it. Let's get into the Full Auto Friday questions. Brought in my buddy Nelson Grant. Today, I always enjoy sitting down and talking with other people about these questions because I can get their thoughts, and it oftentimes helps shape my own. And that is all. Let us begin.
Okay, got the red smoke. Gun run, north and south, west of the smoke, west of the smoke.
Okay, copy, west of the smoke. I'm looking at danger close now.
Oh, wait a minute, give it to me, I need it. Get cleared hot.
Copy, cleared hot.
We on?
Yeah.
Good.
That's why we're wearing
Where's Brian?
That's why we're wearing a headset. Well, I'm auditioning a potential other co-host, so he'll hear about this and then
come at me, Brian.
The world can, you know, decide who they want. What the hell's going on in your world, law enforcement wise? You're a sheriff's deputy here in the Flathead Valley. What's been going on in the world? Does crime still continue with cold weather?
It's going. Yeah. It makes it easy for us. No, it's busy. For some reason, it's every year seems busier and busier, but it's how it goes.
Fair enough. All right. I have five questions. We'll try to go five answers. I'm going to give you the first stab at each of these. I pulled these like 2 or 3 days ago, so I wish I could say that I've actually looked through them.
Yeah, we should give me a heads up on these.
Well, I'm not even giving myself a heads up, but that's why you get first stab at it.
Yeah, last time I liked Brian went, and it gave me time to think about it.
Yeah. Having said that, here we go. Question one. I'm a dad of 4 mid-40s. I'm in good functional fitness, not CrossFit per se, but functional. I'm a hunter, and I've been doing that for decades. What I've never done is any specific self-defense training. I've done some basic pistol training to cover concealed carry requirements, but I'm only marginally proficient from concealment. I've never done any real long-range shooting. I keep shots near 300 yards, which for most people is long range. I shoot fine with my AR, iron sights, but I've never tested under any stress. I don't have any hand-to-hand. That's the knife
ninja.
Hand.
Yeah. Ninja skills.
What do you think ought to be the first physical part of specific defense training scheme? Self-defense and others. Now, obviously, anyone who listens to you knows that the mental components of training are just potentially more important than the physical parts. So since I'm not ignorant, I'll say that I'm working situational awareness, planning, fitness, and other non-specific improvements all the time. Where would you start, Deputy Grant, when it comes to self-defense?
Well, you and I both are involved in jiu-jitsu here.
Yep.
So
is that enough, though, in your mind? Like true, well-rounded self-defense, what would you say?
Well, if he's brought up the firearms part.
Yep.
And he's a dad of 4, so he's busy. And it sounds like he's in good shape. So he's doing a lot of things. But yeah, I think if you, depending on the, you know, if he's got access to a good jiu-jitsu gym, that for sure, hand-to-hand wise, is, in my opinion, the best.
What do you think about layering striking on top of it?
Yeah, it's something I want to beef up on my own, in my own world.
Because I will say that I think jiu-jitsu is amazing. But if you get knocked the fuck out on your feet,
it would suck to have.
Like, say you are a black belt with all the stripes.
Oh yeah.
But you get knocked out on your feet. I'm gonna pass your guard.
Yeah, yeah, totally. I was talking about this to Jesse the other day. It was like, man, it would suck to get in a fight and get knocked out before I get to use my ninja moves.
Yeah.
But,
So I would say you have to control that distance too, because I can only imagine in your job as well, you're probably pretty close to people, even some of the, you know, the interactions that you see. We're about me to you, which is, you can get some momentum on the old foot.
Oh, absolutely.
The old fist, the old elbow. Travis, for whatever reasons, continues to recommend a fish hook. I'm not neither for nor against that. I was talking with another guy the other day. He likes to bite, he said, when he fights. I'm not into Hep C, so that's not my jam either.
Yeah, that hasn't come up for me. So
you'd say jits?
Well, here, let's say there's time's not an option, or there's no barrier.
Okay.
Money's no barrier, and you've got access to a great gym, like any gym. So here's my opinion. And then you can backtrack from here. You need to have a striking art, whether it's like Muay Thai or boxing. They say with boxing, by the time you get good, you're taking a lot of hits. But those are two realistic, combative striking arts. You need to have a takedown game, whether it's wrestling or judo, in my opinion. But we're saying that.
And I think at jiu-jitsu school, if you find a good one, you're going to get a touch of both of those.
Absolutely.
Like the stand-up weeks that we do is a little bit of judo. He's using words that I don't understand.
Right.
And some grappling, and I do understand headlock. But the other Japanese stuff, I'm out on that.
Yeah, and I think a lot of, I don't know. I think some gyms do not touch on stand-up.
That's what I'm saying. But depends on the gym. You need to have a well-rounded approach.
Yep. Some of my buddies that come here and train, they're really impressed with our stand-up. So, and then you need to have a ground game, which obviously I believe in jiu-jitsu, but I think there's three components to a fight. There's the striking, there's the takedown, and then there's the ground part. And it'd be great to have time to develop to all three of those, but that's not always the case. And then also firearms. Man, if it sounds like he's got an iron-sighted AR.
And a pistol, I think, if he was worried.
Okay.
Well, I think, because he was talking about proficiency from concealment. So I'm going to assume he has a pistol and a long gun.
And he talked about stress, inducing stress. So what is cool, like I know in our valley, in our area, we have gun clubs. And they have, you don't have to be a part of the gun club. They have random shoots, like a couple times a year. So you can drop in without even being a member of the club, pay your daily fee. They're going to check on you and make sure that you're safe and all that. But that could induce stress. It could give you some skills on like a three gun type environment.
Yeah.
But if we're talking time is not limited, which it sounds like it is, those are things that I would focus on.
What I would say is if your time is limited, like this person is talking about, he has nothing when it comes to the closest of ranges, meaning having your hand on somebody else. I would actually, I think, and if it comes to, let's say somebody for the first time in their life thinks, oh man, I'm in danger. I almost am always going to, I'm always going to point them towards tools first.
Mm-hmm.
Because in an hour, if I have an hour, I could teach somebody how to safely handle a gun and protect themselves. I couldn't do that with jiu-jitsu because I consider that to be a skill and a lifelong practice. The bridge between those two things is the tool. So I'm going to start people on the tool first. So for this person, in addition to everything that you had said, I would say brush up on your pistol skills as well too, unless you were going to walk around town with your open carry AR. And I don't care if it's legal. Don't do that. I would say brush up on your pistol skills with your tools, because that will be the buffer that's going to allow you the time to work on your skill. Because that right there, whether you like guns or hate guns, they exist. It is the most effective way to take a life and to protect yourself. And sometimes those two things need to happen at exactly the same time. I mean, shit. Jiu-jitsu, we're talking about. It's a long path.
Oh, absolutely.
And it'll get you there. And the likelihood of you needing to use your gun once you've gotten there are low.
Yeah.
But we're talking time.
Yeah.
And tools will bridge the gap to time, in my opinion.
I always say, work on the sucker punch and the 50-yard dash. You'll be good to go.
Perfect. That was from Deputy Grant in the Flathead Valley. All right, question two. I'm 17. And this is more of a theme question. So this is more not specifically about this, and you'll understand why I say not specifically about this question, but more the theme.
Oh, so you have read these.
I remember pulling this one because I look for the themes when I pull the questions.
Gotcha.
I'm 17, soon to be 18, and one day I want to be in the Serbian anti-terroristic unit. So this is why it's not specific. But, and this is where it gets to the theme, my family is so against it. My sister says one day I would deploy somewhere and it would take 50 years from her life. How do I deal with that? Now, that's the end of that question. What I'm going to say is I get these all the time. I want to be a police officer. I want to go into the military. My family tells me that it will kill them. What do I do when I have a burning desire and passion, but my family says, no, you can't do that? That's the theme of this question, because I don't know shit about the Serbian anti-terroristic unit. Probably called the SBU, though.
Wow. Well, 17, pretty early on in the laps around the sun.
Unless you die at 19.
Correct.
Then you're almost done.
So then fulfill your dreams.
Go which you won't it. Be able to do in 2 years anyway. True. So I probably shouldn't have even said that. Moving on.
Yeah. Well, it sounds, I mean, I've heard the same thing, you know, mostly
all the time.
Mostly military based, because in law enforcement, there's a long road to being 17 and wanting to get in. And you see it a lot with ride-alongs and people that come into the department. But I mean, being realistic, you're going to be in your mid-20s. Not always.
So
a lot of, yeah, I mean, a lot of some departments that need guys, I mean, they're picking them up at 21. But where I started my career, it was 22, 23 before I sworn in, you know? I mean, I went to college and then, so there's a gap of time there, but.
But what would you have done if your family that whole time was like, Nelson, no, Nelson, your mom was like, Nelson, you're killing me. I'm going to be worrying about
you. Sure.
What would you do?
I think this is a big difference between law enforcement and military, because with
then
military.
Stop talking about law enforcement and answer this gentleman's question.
Well, what I'm getting at is. With the military, I mean, you're taking that oath and you're shipping out. So it's an immediate break. With law enforcement, it's a long-term goal or a long timeline, so they can kind of get used to the hot water, you know, over time. But
the military is a pretty gradual on-ramp as well.
Is it? Though. Okay.
Boot camp.
Yep.
Occupational
training.
But
once you go to boot camp, I mean, you're pretty much.
Yeah, and you do geographically leave unless you live where, you know, the boot camp is actually conducted, but you're not going to be able to go home on the weekends. But it's not, you don't join the military, raise your right hand, and then get sent into a trench.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that hasn't happened in the past. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure on everybody's journey, but in the modern day military, that's not the way it works.
Yeah. At the end of the day.
Talk it into that microphone. So
I'm
get in front
I'm
of your
talking,
face.
Man.
Pull it in front of your face.
It's here.
There you go.
So he's 17.
Yep.
I think he needs to pursue what his dreams are. Keep those in front of them. It's hard if your family doesn't support you, but I think over time they're gonna see that it's your passion, if it really is, if that's what you're supposed to be doing. Whatever you have a deep burning desire to do, I think that people will see that, especially in your family. Yeah, they might be worried, or they might be not super stoked up front, but as they see your passion towards it, or they should, and if they don't, you gotta do you. You know, I mean, you're 17, so 18.
I can think of only one feeling or one thing that would be worse than having your family potentially upset with you, and that would be looking back on your life with regret.
Yeah, yeah.
If they're truly your family, right?
Yeah.
And, I mean, I would hope, I mean, for my family, what do I want for them? The best. I want
absolutely.
Them a fulfilled and happy life. I may not agree with all decisions made in that pursuit, but I do believe people have to choose their own path. So your family hopefully can find it in them to support you, because it sounds like they're maybe a little bit scared right now, and that's okay. They can be scared, but I would recommend also following your passion, because you have to be your own person. And if you live your life only trying to satisfy other people, specifically your family, and I could understand why you would take their input over others, I think you're going to be unfulfilled and look back on your life with regret.
I agree. And I think the parents or whoever the family member is would regret that too. That's a selfish comment to make, you know.
So for anybody listening who has this, you know, my mom and dad don't want me to do this. What I would recommend, though, is don't hide it from them, because I think that will make it worse. So even if they disagree with what you were going to do, have the conversation up front. Don't not call them for a week and send your first note home from boot camp like, dearest mother and father, this is your son. I'm in boot camp. Don't do that shit. So,
yeah.
Okay, question three. Back to guns. I am planning to be a first-time gun owner, but don't have much experience or know many people who shoot. I've been to shooting ranges a few times, but have never owned a gun. As a side note, the last time I was at a range, I got hit in the neck. Only went to the doctors because it was bothering me, and after an x-ray, they removed a small metal sliver. So you got some probably some splashback. In addition to a recommended first gun, what other items should I have for safe storage and transport to and from a range? Considerations: one, I live in California. Two, my wife and I have a five-year-old son. I don't know if that changes your recommendations, but I thought I'd mention them. Any thoughts for a first-time gun owner?
Get something. Well, let's talk about the protection and the security of it. So start from the house and work backwards. So you need to have a safe. If you have a gun, you need to think about where the guns are going to be stored. And I think that should be before you get the gun.
I think it's one of the few things that Second Amendment lovers and Second Amendment haters can agree upon. Both parties seem to admit that guns exist.
Mm-hmm.
Both parties, I hope, would agree that since they do exist, if they're not being used or in positive control, they should be stored safely. I think that's the one yeah. thing where the two parties actually yeah. come together.
Yeah, but doing it, I mean...
Doing it, I mean, the percentage of gun owners that don't own a safe is baffling to
yeah.
me. And in my personal opinion, guns are designed to kill, and people avoid saying that because they feel like it makes it a more dangerous conversation to have. Mm-hmm. They're worried that somebody who's against guns will use that against you. Okay, if you want to be intellectually dishonest, that's what they're designed for. So if it's not in positive control, dude, yeah. put it somewhere that's not accessible to anybody, specifically five-year-old,
yeah.
safe, mandatory.
Yeah, and I'm not worried about my daughter. It's the friends that come over
Correct.
To the house, you know. But they make some cheap, really good biometric safes.
Yes.
Super cheap. I mean, $100. You can get something that's fingerprint activated or even a code or, but anyway.
And don't leave the code 1234, all right? That's probably the factory setting. Don't do that.
4321.
Yeah. That would be better than
yes.
the former.
So, and you can get those for your car too.
Yeah.
Like bolted down in the trunk. I mean, it's easy to do. It sounds hard, but otherwise, I mean, most guns come in a little plastic safe that you can throw a lock on it. I don't know what the California laws are. I think you have to have the mag out and a chamber empty and
I believe you do. And those and for those of you who are looking to buy guns and you're curious about traveling, keep that plastic box, even if you have a safe, because you can throw that lock on it and that's the box you'll use when you travel with the
yeah.
airlines.
Yeah.
But where would you start people if you
Are we talking pistol?
Yeah.
He didn't specify, but
I'd say pistol first.
I mean,
are you gonna put that microphone in front of your mouth?
Dude, it's there.
And actually it in front of your mouth. It's like conical. All right.
Yeah.
Bishop's crushing you right now, just so you know.
It's all right. There's lipstick on here from him.
Okay.
So
he wasn't the last guest, but
oh.
it was Will Willis, the host of Forged in Fire. But
okay. So Glocks are pretty easy to use. You know, there's not a lot going on. There's no external hammer. They're pretty solid. I would recommend a Glock. If you get used to shooting a Glock, you can shoot a lot of different pistols.
But caliber, where would you start somebody?
Depends. Right now, caliber, you know, certain ammo is hard to get, but a 9mm, in my opinion, is a really good, it goes for a broad range of uses.
Yeah.
From, you know, shooting, target shooting to shooting gophers.
Yeah.
Yep. Self-defense, home defense.
And you should be able to find it everywhere.
Yeah.
Except for during an ammo shortage. United States
currently.
Currently. But it, you know, there's some really weird rounds out there, and I support people getting whatever round they want. But if it's like only available at one store where you live and you travel mm-hmm. with that thing, I mean,
yeah,
I hope you carry a sock full of bullets.
Yeah, yeah. I carry a 10 mil for bear protection during hunting season and stuff.
Those I have one too.
Yep. And I
but those rounds up here are pretty accessible.
Yeah, but I also don't shoot it much.
Yeah.
So that box has lasted me a while.
That's a good point.
You know.
I'm glad you don't shoot it much because that would mean that there's a bear. Well, you should shoot it a little bit to stay current.
Just make sure that thing.
So I agree. I think you started the right place. I was going to start exactly the same place. You have to have the safe storage. And also, for people listening, gun safes are awesome for storing things other than just guns.
Mm-hmm.
I have, you know, DD-214s getting out of the military. You can only get one original. You can make a bunch of copies, but you only have one original, so you can get some that have like a fireproof rating, the biometric code, whatever it is. I have a big safe in my garage, and like half the stuff in there is not a gun.
Yeah.
It's just valuable stuff that I don't want to have to worry about. So
absolutely.
It's great for those two. I would start pistol. Glock is a great. I mean, start with something that's simple that you understand. And the advice I always give is go to a gun range and ask somebody who works at the gun range to show you a couple different options and go with what feels the best in your hand. Maybe for you, a Glock doesn't feel good in your hand. And then same thing with the caliber. Shoot one that you can control. Do not start with the 357 Magnum. Although Dirty Harry looked amazing with it, that should not be your first gun. And I think that's about it.
Yeah. He also talked about friends. He doesn't have any friends in the gun world.
Yes.
So I know in our valley, we have, like I was mentioning, gun clubs. And I've met several of the guys. I'm not part of them, but they're really good dudes. I don't know about the drop-in people. We have a private range that we use, so I'm not really around a bunch of other people using guns. But I would start with maybe drop in on a gun club night, or you know, find out when they're shooting. I can't remember what they're called, but the Glacier Shooting Team or whatever they call themselves up here. But
they're good called dudes. The Nighthawks.
Yeah, Nighthawks.
I don't know if that's the case, but that's what I'm calling them. They get together and they do Nighthawk shit on Tuesday
nights.
That's
cool. Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah. Now, reach out. And, of course, the internet is a wealth of information. The warning sign I'll give you with that is that not everybody on the internet actually has good information, so it can be difficult to separate the wheat from the chaff.
And he's concerned. He got, you know, some that injury there on the range. Be aware of, like, know what safe handling of guns is and recognize when somebody's not being safe.
Yeah.
And remove yourself from that problem. Because if you go to the gun club and they're all flagging you,
which means pointing a gun in your direction.
Yeah. I wouldn't go back to that gun club. I'd find some other buddies.
Here's what I recommend people do when they go to a civilian range. Step into your firing line, put your weapon out nice and safely in accordance with their rules, and I want you to look directly up. And I want you to see how close to where your feet are in the roof where the bullet holes start. And there's a shooting range here in the valley, an indoor one that
absolutely.
I go to. And they start almost directly overhead. How does that happen? I'm going to call that a negligent discharge into the ceiling. And then they just walk themselves down the range. That happens because idiots also own guns and they're not safe. And if you are around somebody that is like that, like you said, leave immediately and tell somebody at the range so they can get them out of there. I would not recommend you as another shooter there challenging that person. Get out of that situation and go find the range master and give it to them. But I'm not joking. Next time you go to the range, just look up. And just realize that every one of those bullet holes in the fucking ceiling has a story to it and a person pulling the trigger on that. So use with caution.
Absolutely.
Two more questions. All right. You had some young emailers today. I'm surprised that people this young are listening. I'm 15, and I live in San Diego as an only child with two parents who love me. My dad is a captain in the Navy, and my mom is a lawyer. We are financially well off because of my dad's military service. I can basically get a full ride to any college that accepts me. I say all this not to brag, but rather to say I got dealt a better hand than most at the game of life. This is a very deep email for a 15-year-old. This worries me, however, because I will sometimes hear you, Brian Bishop, or other veterans on your show talk about how their childhoods were not as good as mine and how it was that adversity that got them to where they are today. This concerns me, however, because I dream of one day becoming an officer in the Marine Corps, and I worry about my lack of hard times early on will hold me back from achieving what I want to in life. Therefore, my question to you is this. What advice can you give me and other people who want to achieve something challenging but have not already experienced or overcome childhood adversity?
Wow.
You want me to fire off first on this one?
Yeah,
this one I remember pulling. So the people you specifically mentioned, I don't think it's the adversity that made them who they are. I think that they are great examples of showing that regardless of what happens to you, you can't control what happens to you in life most often, but you can always control how you receive that and what you do with it. And some people get defined by it, and some people are able to use it and stuff it into a fire to create motivation, and they're able to do amazing things. And I've actually had quite a few people on the podcast now, a couple that are yet to come out, talking about their upbringing and how it was miserable. And I'm sitting here listening like, holy shit. Like, I feel like this 15-year-old kid, like, how did we end up in the same place? Because you were able to go through so much. They're able to accomplish much in spite of what happened to them, not because of what happened to them. That's my personal opinion.
Good.
And adversity is something that you can seek out on your own. So who cares about the financial aspect? Because I'll tell you this right now, and this is a lesson that I didn't learn until later in life when it comes to money. It's the least valuable asset we have. My goal in life is to go out with $0 in the bank account, but bitching stories along the way. Because nothing I buy is going to go with me. No money that I have is going to go with me. So don't worry about that financial aspect. That can bring you some comforts, but you can go seek adversity. Go pick out something that's really physically difficult you don't think you can do and dive headlong at that and challenge yourself in that regard. Sit back at your house in your Italian leather sofa and think about what it is in your life that scares you. Are you scared of physical confrontation? Go find an MMA school and get into a fight. Mm-hmm. Are you scared of heights? Go for it. Well, you're not old enough to skydive, but when you're old enough to skydive, go skydiving. Or, you know, find a mentor and go rock climbing. Go sketch yourself out. Determine what it is that you're scared of, which would be your adversity, if you chose to go after it, and then go after it. And so that way, you don't have to worry about having horrendous childhood upbringing. You can just seek adversity and get all of the growth from that, absent those horrendous stories that those people have.
Well said. Well said. Man, I had a good upbringing. I can't.
Why are you so fucked up as a person then?
Yeah, exactly. Privilege, man.
I did too. I had a great upbringing.
Yep. And I just like you said, adversity, you can seek adversity out. And you're going to find adversity, whether you want it or not.
Yeah.
And if he wants to go in the military and be an officer, is that what he said?
Marine Corps, yes.
Okay. He needs to learn some lessons on, I mean, right now he can see it with the circle that he's around. If he's around well-off people, and watch how they interact with less well-off people, you know, less fortunate.
And watch how they deal with adversity as well.
Yeah.
Just keep an eye open for all of that.
And he's going to have a lot of years between here and there. And along those years, challenge himself, just like you were saying, because the more you can put yourself into the fire, the harder you become. And yeah, that's about, I mean, you hit it right on the head. Yep.
It's the stories of people who have dealt with that in their childhood, like the guy I had on Sean Rogers, the Green Beret.
Yeah, I listened to that.
I'm sitting here like, as he's talking, I can't even fathom. All I can really think of is my own kids. I was like, if anybody ever did that to my kid, you would be trying to put, you know, your police handcuffs on me.
Yeah.
Which I wouldn't let you because I would fucking own you on the ground game. But that's a different story.
Do you feel, I disagree.
Okay, that's fine.
Do you feel there's a lot of times, like he was talking about, he's breaking the mold
because
he's being the dad that he didn't have. Do you see a lot of times when kids are brought up in comfort, they're less responsible with their children, and then that pendulum goes back and forth? Because I saw it with some kids I was growing up with where their folks were super rebellious, and then they found they found church, and then they were overly protective, and then my buddy and his brothers became really rebellious because their parents were overbearing. You know what I mean? Like, because they didn't want their kids to turn out the way they did, so they were like curfews at, you know, 7, and at 6:30 they were calling them type thing.
You know, I am not the person to ask that question because I don't keep in track or contact with a single person that I grew up with.
Yeah.
I left where I grew up in Santa Cruz, an amazing place to grow up, an even better place to leave is the way I describe it.
Mm-hmm.
Have nothing but respect for the people who stay, but my philosophy and I think vision of the world is very divergent, and I just was on a different path. So I got to know people in my very late teens, early 20s, so I don't really know about their upbringing.
Yeah.
Because I just don't have that.
And
that,
and so my only caution would be with him is to not coast, because he had it given to him.
Yeah.
You know,
that's
and
for sure.
And he can recognize it. So that's a sweet thing, because maybe some of his peers cannot. But don't coast. Don't put it in neutral and just go.
Yeah. All right. Last question for today. And this one is on a topic that I'm not intimately familiar with the details on, but it's, I don't know if you've heard of this. They're in Australia. They're charging a bunch of SAS guys with war crimes. So the question is, here in Australia, a bunch of members of our Special Air Service regiment have been indicted for war crimes, many of which were documented on helmet cam and released by the ABC, Australian Broadcasting Corporation. What are your thoughts on members of Special Operations, foreign and U.S., being charged years after the fact when what were first thought to be legal orders have years later been ruled illegal? Second question, more based on personal observations of you over the years. Okay, I'll get to that one later. So what are your first thoughts on the first one?
So the discipline is coming after years of a gap of years.
Many. In my understanding, it might be close to 10 years after the events in question.
I'm not stoked about that. I think it's easy to quarterback things from where we're sitting.
Yep.
And it's even easier when you start getting more and more info, things that it's like a, I'll use a really broad analogy, but a body cam. One of the reasons we don't have night vision on our body cams is so that when you show the jury,
what you can see as an
officer. Exactly. With my flashlight, I'm illuminating things with my flashlight at night. I see hands, I don't see weapons, or I see weapons, I don't see, you know.
Yeah.
So you don't want to give a false sense that we didn't see. So if you're conducting the investigation, you find out other information that maybe these guys didn't know, but then you use that to judge them or use that as, you know. So I don't like it.
So what I'll say on this is a war crime is a war crime. And if you commit a war crime, you should be prosecuted to the extent of the law. Having said that, if an order that was once legal or deemed as an order that needed to be followed because it was legitimate is 10 years down the road, they change it moving forward, that's what it has to be, is moving forward. You can't go punitively back 10 years in the rearview mirror and hang people by the yardarm. For one, they were doing, I guarantee you, the best that they could inside of the parameters that they had at the time. You add 10 years to that and then change the parameters. Yes, some of the things that situations that I was in and the optic I have in my life now looking backwards as opposed to the moment that I was in it, yeah, they look very different to me. But I was doing the best I could inside of the letter of the law. If you change the law, was I then doing something illegal? In today's optic, but not at the time. Yeah. And we need to treat it like that. So if you're going to change the law, it needs to be changed going forward. Don't try this bullshit where you're going to go back because, you know, where's the stop point on this?
Yeah.
Well, let's look at something else. Let's change the BAC to 0.02. And anybody who's ever blown that on a roadside sobriety test, you now have a DUI. It doesn't fucking work like that. It's going forward.
Yep.
So,
second part, man.
Yeah. Second part of the question. Is one based on personal observations of you talking about me over the years on YouTube. Your first appearance on the JRE with Tate Fletcher, you seem much more aggressive and confrontational minded, especially with the subject of Gitmo and black and white rights and wrongs. All I said was that we should kill everybody there. Moving on. As the years have gone by, I, maybe wrongly, have noticed you have gotten much more mellow and calmly spoken. You appear to be less convinced that you are always right and appear more open to other ideas or sides of the story. Is this a result of leaving the military or mellowing with age? I suppose, more importantly, do you like how you've changed? It's a question that has played on my mind for a while, whilst, one of my favorite words, watching you. So I thought I'd articulate the best I can here. Sorry if that comes across as psychobabble. I'm not a psychologist. So, like I said, we were having a conversation about Gitmo, and I posed to them a hypothetical question, and I was less concerned with their answer. It's just a thought process of how far people are willing to go before they're going to take action. And in an attempt to save time, I won't repeat the question. If you want to go back on that show and watch it, yes, I said we should kill everybody in Guantanamo, and Tate and Joe looked at me really weird. However, I view the life through a different lens. I don't feel like a different person. What I think may be the difference is I have more practice talking now.
Yeah.
So I think I have probably increased my vocabulary and have a different ability to articulate my point. And also it's easier when I'm on a show that I'm hosting to set the pace because I generally know what's coming as opposed to being there in that setting where I'm just getting asked questions and I'm doing the best I can to fend off looking like an idiot.
Well, I don't know the scenario of that one, but aside from what you just set up, but I'll say, as your bro, I mean, dude, you're super transparent, so it's cool. You know, I think that you should surround yourself with people like that, people that are honest with you and transparent and do what they are. You know,
it's not easy to be honest. I was talking about this on the podcast. You know, you got to. I do the best I can to tell people. I treat them the way I would want to be treated. I want to hear what I need to be told, not what I want to be told.
Yep.
And that's a rough pill to swallow. So, closing thoughts by Nelson Grant.
Yeah, some heavy-hitting questions.
That's what we do here on Fridays.
Yeah,
no big deal.
Kidding, man. some young emails, dude. That's cool.
Yeah.
No, it was good. Thanks for having me.
Cool. We'll do it again since, you know, Bishop can't be.
Yeah, where's he at?
I don't know. He just didn't want to make time to be here, so whatever.
Understand the west bank of the river?
That bank farm, west bank, it gives me help. He'll give it to me in the grove.
Okay, one's in from the north. I've got the west bank of the river. Two's going to give it to you in the grove.
Roger, give me that gun, run. Wait along that bad, baby.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you. Thanks for taking the time to tune in, whether you're listening on an audio-only platform or you're watching on YouTube. I appreciate that you take the time every week to tune in. People ask me a lot, what can they do to help me spread the word? And the answer is actually embedded in the question. The biggest thing you guys can do to help me, if you enjoy the podcast and you think it would be helpful to others, is subscribe and share it with other people. And if you have the time, go on to Apple Podcasts and leave me a rating and a review. If you think the podcast sucks, tell me it sucks and leave a 0-star review or the lowest stars possible. If you have a question, comment, or suggestion, you can go to clearedhotpodcast.com. And there is a contact me button right there, which will land in my inbox. And the last thing, if people are interested in helping out, what you can do is fly the old flag. And by that, I don't mean an actual flag, because I don't have any of those. I'm talking about t-shirts or sweatshirts or hats, whatever it may be. Again, clearedhotpodcast.com. Click on the shop tab, and hopefully something in there looks like it would be an item you would like to wear around town. And then you could tell people what it is when they ask you. But that is it. The biggest thing I can say is thank you. I truly appreciate it. And until next time, see you.